and the experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, the raging inferno at the Sema industrial area in parts of the country. Are we losing the battle against fire outbreaks? Hawkers in Accra to vacate the streets by the deadline of tonight. AMA declares war on street hawkers in the metropolis again. And President Mahama calls 4,800 witnesses in response to Nanado's petition at the Supreme Court. Lawyers are saying it is within his rights to do so. How possible would that be? Please be our guest as we examine all these issues. But before then, Barbara Yakubu is here for a summary of the day's news.
The Supreme Court hearing the NDC's application to join President Mahama and the EC in the NPP's challenge of the 2012 presidential elections has fixed Wednesday, 16th January for hearing. This follows the decision of the NPP to withdraw its earlier decision against the composition of the panel. President Mahama says his government will fight money laundering and terrorism financing in the country. He has also called for collaboration by member states in curbing the menace as its source in the sub-region. President Mahama made the pledge when an anti-money laundering and terrorism task force called on him at the Castle Osu. And the executive chairman of Zoom Lion and Jospong Group of Companies, Dr. Joseph Siao Ejepong, has called for an increase in the funds allocated for water and sanitation in the country. Speaking at the opening of the 64th New Year School in Accra, Dr. Siao Ejepong said the nation is likely to miss the Millennium Development Goals target of 2015 if the current expenditure of the 3.5% of the GDP is maintained for the sectors.
Behind the news, you are getting us live on Garden City Radio. And if you are in the capital, you can be reaching us on Ubunu 96.5 in Tema and also on Unique 95.7 MHz. The Accra Metropolitan Assembly has declared war on street hawkers in the metropolis. This follows the end of a two-week deadline to hawkers in Accra today. Consequently, any hawker found on the streets of Accra tomorrow will be arrested by the Assembly's task force. The Public Relations Officer of the AMA, Numo Blafo, has joined us on the line as we examine that directive. Welcome, Numo Blafo.
Thank you.
People will say that you've continuously issued such warnings, but any time you do so, not long after, the people get back. How different would this be?
It's not going to be any different as to what we've been doing all the time, because we are dealing with, I would say, the same people. But you see, whenever you do the same thing over and over, you get the same results. So we've also seen where they have seen our weaknesses and they've capitalized on it. And we hope to strategize well, at least to make sure that this directive goes down well. And then if we are able to move them from the street, we sustain it.
Yeah, you are speaking of weaknesses for the metropolitan authorities. What do you consider as such?
Well, the weaknesses we have is the high indiscipline of the people, which sometimes we find difficult dealing with, because most of the time when you want to go straight to deal with the issues, then people turn around and begin accusing the AMA of, I don't know the word to use, of being harsh, or we should use human face and all that. But this time, we're going to make sure that the law takes its full course. Because, one, these people are breaking the Road Traffic Act, Amendment Act 2008, Section 29(2), and they are also breaking the AMA Street Talking Bylaw 2011. Therefore, we'll make the law of this of the Assembly and then that of the Road Traffic Act work.
Yeah. Previously, all these laws were there. And we remember 2 years ago when you had to embark on such a similar exercise, we were told that they were not going to come back again. Not long after, they were there. Are you going to adopt different strategies in enforcing these bylaws you are talking about?
You see, this time, the issue we have is that we see the media as our partners in development, because if we are to develop this city of ours, the media should be very an integral part of the efforts that will be put into this program. Actually, what I mean is that when we are able to remove these people from the streets and the pavement, you find a section of the media going to these people, asking them questions like, oh, now that you have been moved from here, where are you going to stay? How do you think of, coping with the situation and all that? And that gives way to a flood of statements to the extent that you find politicians wading into this very debate. And this time, I think the media should stop this kind of, I don't know whether divisive tactics or whatever they want to name it or want to call it, so that we all collaborate, because we need development. In fact, it affects, their activities affect all aspects of society.
Yeah.
Because if you are going to work in the morning and because of hawkers or traders on the pavement, you cannot move as fast as you should move. Note that you will be late for work, and that leads to low productivity. So now, if we are able to collaborate, the media taking its part or doing its part as being taking the education to them, that's what they are selling. Actually, they are also infringing on people's rights. Those selling on the pavement are infringing on the movement of pedestrians. They are constitutional rights, which gives them the freedom of movement. And those selling in the streets are also infringing on the rights of the motorists and also the health hazards that associate this activity. Maybe today they will not see, they will not feel it, but tomorrow, who knows what may happen.
Yeah.
And even the accident that happened with vehicles missing or losing their brakes or failing their brakes, running into people, killing, innocent lives.
Yeah.
Just because you want to earn a living. Why don't we do it in a normal way, as normal human beings?
You are raising genuine concerns. But some will say that apart from maybe talking about it so much today or even yesterday, they might not have heard of it so much. You are talking about the media as partners. How have you really brought them on board to discuss the issue so that it's so much disseminated that the people themselves find reason to move off?
I think the media has been asking this same question over and over.
Because we've not seen a lot of change when we introduce the directive for the hawkers to go away.
We also, whenever the media asks the same questions, we give them the same answer. And we think that the media, your work, as it's been spelled out, to educate, to entertain, and all that. But the educative part do not come out. All we see from the media is raising negative issues about authorities trying to instill discipline in the citizenry. And I think that is where...
No more, undue generalization do not really help the situation. Maybe sections may be doing it, yes.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I'm saying sections may be doing it, but undue generalization as to whether all media seem to be backing the hawkers may not be doing it, because you are calling on them as partners.
Well, I said the section.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Good for the clarification.
I said the section of the media do not want to do their educative part. And in short, I would say most of the media won't do their educative part. Because one, they will raise issues. These hawkers or traders will raise issues. And instead of the media telling them on their rights and also their responsibilities, will rather take their concerns to authority and attempt to back these traders. And that is that.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happens that way, you find these people becoming very bold to be indisciplined.
Yeah.
And that is what is creating a problem. But then, you can, if you've seen some of the footages, they know what they are doing is not good. They know it is illegal. You understand?
Yeah.
So, if they know what they are doing is illegal, why don't we tell them that? Then they should stop.
Let's look at one thing.
If they themselves know that what they are doing is not the right thing, then why don't we tell them then to stop?
Okay.
Because if you should tell me that, then we should find a place for them. Excuse me. This, the whole of AMA, where is an open space that can be used for a market again?
Let's look at it now, as it is. they must go, get into maybe even the satellite markets already created. But here is the case where some even complain that for the already existing satellite markets, some people have already acquired shares. They are not using it. And yet, they find these shares empty. Are you going to take action in this direction so that when they are getting back, they have a place to eke out a living?
Well, I think you won't need to release all the arsenal that we want.
A little bit of it can help the people you want to get back.
You know what we're going to do again is that all people who have these shares or stores and they are not going into it, we will issue a statement on what we are going to do with those stores. Because now, let me tell you, if you go to Katamanton, you'll find all these used clothing sellers on one road behind the Liberty House. That is the Ghana Commercial Bank on the Liberty, is it Kwame Nkrumah Avenue or Liberty Avenue? You find all of them there. Why? Because they sublet their stores to seamstresses, tailors, cassette sellers, and a whole lot of people undertaking different activities. Meanwhile, they are on the streets. And now, when you want them to leave the streets, they are asking us to take them somewhere. Where do you think we can take them? And mind you, most of these people we see here do not reside within the AME. They come from other districts to come and do business and go away. Now, they are coming to do this business, at least put a lot of pressure on the AME. And if we are not able to at least put them in a place where we can control them, I think there will come a time when certain things will be in Accra which the AME cannot be able to handle.
Yeah. No more. Sometimes our sympathies will also go to the assembly on trying to manage this trying issues in relation to humans. You've mentioned the human face approach. Have you tried to get them in the meeting, even talk to their leadership and let them also see from your perspective?
That kind of meetings, or I would say consultations, have been done over and over again, and we keep on coming to the same situation again. So therefore, this is not the time for us to go into any consultation. It is a time we are giving directives, and we feel that directives of authorities must be obeyed, and must be obeyed in the fullest.
Yeah, we don't want to get to the deja vu again. That is why we are talking about this same issue. So after tomorrow, what happens to people who are found on the streets hawking?
Well, the human face we are going to employ is try and then talk them out to leave the place.
Mm-hmm.
We will try as much as possible and in gradual process move them from the area. But then, if we feel or we see people being recalcitrant, then we will allow the law to take its course.
That's good. Numa, before we let you go, this is not directly connected to the hawkers issue, but you might have heard so much, and you've spoken also about the landfill site at Achimota and what is happening in relation to it. What is the decision as of now and what is happening to it?
Well, as we're speaking now, the place that is the refuse site is being capped, and it is by way of reclaiming the place for it to regenerate for usage again. You know, that place was a pit, a very big pit, and if we had left it open, no one knows what may have happened at that place. So the refuse that was dumped there was just used to fill up that place in a bid to reclaim that land. So we are capping it. And by the end of that activity, I don't think we will have any problem at that place again.
Are the residents aware that something of the sort is happening? They embarked on a demonstration
yes,
led by the MP.
They are very much aware. But you see, when people have maybe made a statement on an issue, and that issue is being looked at, and then they hit the street, then you should know that there is more than meets the eye. There might be some other motivations to their demonstration this morning because the place is being capped. So I'm wondering why they went on the demonstration. I'm wondering why they went on this demonstration. And you see, they also generate refuse. So have we asked them where they dump their refuse?
Well, big questions. But we'll be exploring further and see how best even the waste generated will become effective resource for more development. But for now, I want to thank you so much for your time, Numu.
Thank you very much.
Numu Blafo is the public relations officer of the Accra Metro Assembly, looking at the issue of the hawkers there and that waste management problem. You are still live on Behind the News, and you are getting us live on Sunrise FM in Kofodia and also on Volta Star Radio, that is in Ho. President John Mahama at the weekend accepted the MPP's challenge to his legitimacy in court with a response to Nanado and Cole's petition at the country's highest court. Last Saturday's response, filed on the deadline day at the Supreme Court registry by counsel to the president, Tony Luther, dismissed Nanado's petition, describing it as lacking merit. But the interesting aspect of the two-paragraph response was the intention of the president to call more than 4,000 witnesses to testify at the hearing. What do legal minds make of the president's response? Masolo Fukwajima is a lecturer at the Ghana School of Law and is joining us as we look at the issue. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Have you ever heard about this 4,800 people as witnesses in the case?
Well, I'm not yet aware of any such case, but that doesn't mean it cannot happen.
Can you tell us the closest you've heard to this number?
Oh, well. You know, law is not about mathematics or about numbers. It's about trying to prove your case with the relevant testimonies, either from witnesses or documents. That's what you need. So if in the wisdom of a litigant, the litigant thinks that it is 1 million, if it satisfies the rules as to avoiding undue delay and then avoiding cumulative evidence by Section 52 of the Evidence Act, if they satisfy that one, then you are at liberty to do your case as you wish, because Section 58 of the Courts Act provides that parties to civil actions are at liberty to call witnesses, as many witnesses as they need to prove their case. But this is subject to the rules of evidence, where relevant evidence may be excluded or not be admitted because it will cause undue delay or it will amount to cumulative of evidence, which means that you may have one evidence and you have thousands of people coming to say the same thing. The court will say, well, we think that it's not necessary or it's irrelevant. Even though relevant, we will not admit it. So normally that's what will happen.
Yeah. But at what point can the court say that, oh, all the people are coming to say the same things and it's just meant to delay a process?
Well, that is, you see, that's when the process starts. You call a witness, and then in the wisdom of the court, if they are coming, they will find out what they are coming to say. They start, it's a cumulative, because they will ask you, what is the issue? You see? What is the issue? If they are coming to talk about different issues, of course, then you may not stop them. This is my point.
Yes.
But if they are coming to talk about the same issue, then that's where cumulative evidence comes in, because it's the same matter they are coming to talk about. And in any event, in our law, if the matter is not the substantive matter, but rather a collateral matter, sometimes we don't even... One answer... a collateral matter, the court may say that is final, and therefore will not allow you to be calling people to come and talk about aside issues. When you say something is collateral, it means it's an aside matter. You know, we have a substantive matter, and you may have an aside. That is a collateral issue.
Yeah.
Such answers may sometimes be considered as being final to an issue, and therefore will not allow people to be calling different witnesses. Because any time you call a witness, a person also coming to cross-examine, and then it will be another case.
Yeah.
So all these things, the judges are aware of the rules, I mean, we all have learned the rules, and therefore, as I said, you don't even need somebody to come and corroborate what you say.
Mm-hmm.
One person's evidence may be sufficient.
Yeah, but so
if there's a matter and one person is a credible witness,
yeah,
that evidence may be sufficient. You don't call somebody to come and confirm, and even to call about 100 or 200, or because if you have one credible witness, it's more important than having 1,000 pathological liars who come to court and are not considered to be credible.
Yeah, let's look at the present case without going into the merits of it, so that we place within perspective the collateral one and then the substantive one. Where do you place them, so that for those listening who may not have the legal understanding, they will know what is collateral in this case and what is substantive?
Okay, let's leave that whatever and the hypothetical case.
Yeah.
If it's a hypothetical case, if for example, you've been charged with an offense,
mm-hmm,
and you claim that a policeman collected money from you, see, the in order to drop something or something which is not part of the actual case. When you call a person and says he denies it. If you want to prove it, you have to call witnesses. Is that not the case?
Mm-hmm.
To prove it. But that is going to lead to multiplicity of issues. Now, you are going to have a second trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a court may say that, well, since this is not the actual matter, this is not the substantive matter we are dealing with, answers that people give, in order not to prolong the matter, you will take it as being final. You see, because it is not the matter we are dealing with. It is something which is an aside, maybe to use a normal language, aside issue, or side issue, not the main issue. So that is what sometimes we call them collateral issues.
Yeah.
Answers to such issues, if you want to go on, it will also become a second trial,
mm-hmm,
and it will delay the matter. So all these things, the rules are there for courts to determine.
Yeah.
As I said, in all cases, evidence, if you are calling a witness, the first question will be, what is the witness coming to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Is that matter a matter which is relevant? If the matter is relevant, then in most cases, if what he's coming to talk about is relevant, then in most cases you'll be allowed to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, then you go to another section in our evidence that which says that a matter may be relevant, which means a witness testimony may be relevant, but if it will lead to undue delay, cause undue delay, or lead to cumulative of evidence, which means they are talking about the same thing, repeating, the court will say, of course, this witness evidence is relevant, but because of what I've just said, A, B, 52, A and B, we will not admit it. So there are a lot of rules in our law, but whatever it is, no court will also prevent because of just mere delay to stop determining the merit of the case, because delay alone will not be used to avoid the due process. It's a balance. We have to balance, because the judges are aware that justice delayed is justice denied. But also sometimes, delay per se will also not be sufficient, because such a delay will go to assist the determination of the matter. So the judges will stick into the middle and come out with rules that will not seem to thwart the efforts of a litigant, because that is not the rule. But if the court finds that the intention of a person is to cause undue delay because of the cumulative of evidence or whatever, then they have the rules to exercise their discretion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've mentioned and even touched on it partially, but let's assume that a litigant, maybe drawing a red herring across the trail, but still thinks that in the long run, this is going to help his or her case. In that stance, what do you do?
If you come again, please.
I'm asking. We might think, oh, it's not so important. It may just be adding up to what has already been said, and we see it as red herring and all. But a litigant might think that, oh, this is rather going to help my case. That is why I'm trying to call such witnesses. In that case, what do you do if that person is pushing?
That's what I'm saying, that in law, we don't have absolutes where I can say yes or no. And that's why I use the term may. As I said, if evidence is relevant, if it is vital to your case, then of course it will be admitted. So if a witness is so important, the court may allow the evidence to come in. But in balancing the equation, if the court thinks that, yes, all what you have said, considering the issue before us, the two witnesses you have called, and the rest that you intend to call, looking at all, it won't add anything to it or change anything. It is just accumulative. That is, it's just repetition, because even without them, we are of the view that you have ample evidence to go on with your case. That's where they will draw the balance. So, and don't forget, even though it is your case, you are not in control. You don't go to court and determine what the judges will do. Because, yes, everything is possible under the sun. So in your view, you should be allowed to come out with all our possibilities. But don't forget, in the legal sense, we do not deal with mere possibilities, but rather we deal with reasonable probabilities, logical evidence, not whatever, because there's everything under the sun. You may want to adduce it. Everything under the sun, because once a person is drowning in a case, even a straw will be sufficient. But it's up to the judge to determine that, considering these matters, yes, this may help you. But on a larger scale, we think that we need to curtail the evidence, because we have two evils. The evil of allowing you to debate this case for 100 years, and then also seeing to it that justice is done expeditiously. When they look at the two, the judges will draw a balance and say that, well, we think that we have ample evidence. Even without the second or third person you are calling, you see, we have sufficient. And don't forget, in law, when a person testifies, you don't need a confirmation. One person's evidence may be sufficient. And therefore, don't think that it's a majority rule, or the more you call people. No, that is not the case. In fact, it is possible that you may have 100 witnesses, and it is possible I may have one witness, but I will win the case because my witness is a credible witness, and your witnesses are not. So, when it comes to court, I mean, it is not a majority or the number, the quantity, but rather the quality of evidence will help a case. And mostly, most lawyers will not go for number. They rather go for quality, because, you know, in law, if you bring more people and they tend to be inconsistent, you see, contradicting each other, one way of saying that your witnesses are not credible is where your witnesses that you have called are giving us inconsistent answers. Mm-hmm. That's your case.
Yeah.
It will not help you. So most lawyers will not go for number. Mm-hmm. Rather, they will go for quality. They go for quality to ensure that they do not go and contradict and spoil their case.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's come to the present case that has drawn all these discussions. How soon, I know you may not be directly related to it, but how soon do you think that the schedule to hear the NDC's application to join the case can be heard, looking at the MPP rescinding its decision to call into question some panel members?
Well, my information, what I know about this case is that there's no pending objection to any panel. That is my information. There's no objection now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no objection at the moment. And I think that the case may take its normal course, a and my information from the court list is that I think they are going to go on this case, the joinder issue, I think on the 16th, which is, I think it's Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And as to how soon they will determine the matter, you and I cannot put a date on it, because I don't think you expected that what happened last, was it Monday, was going to happen. And it's not going to be the last. You get my point?
Yes.
It's not going to be the last where objections...
More objections will be raised.
Because even on the floor, I mean, even the interpretation of one word, somebody may think that you should interpret it this way. If a judge to side with this side, the person may want to drag it. I mean, so, as for time. But whatever it is, I don't normally, because what I still want to maintain that sometimes delays are necessary. You see, that is the difference between revolutionary justice and true justice. Because what we may term to be delay sometimes will be the following of the due process. But the delay must be qualified. If it is undue delay, then the court would step in. But otherwise, it is better sometimes for these delays in order to hear the parties and hear them well, so that you determine the matter once and for all, but rather than to rush. So we can't put any time limit.
So it means we cannot always say justice delayed is justice denied once the wheels are still in motion.
Because that's what I'm saying, that we have that principle, the principle which is justice delayed is justice denied. That is one. And then we have another principle which says that you must give the other party full hearing. Full hearing. See, so you cannot use the so-called justice delay, justice denied to prevent the person from being heard. So these are two main principles which coincide with each other. They live side by side. And the judges who are the reasonable people who are well-versed with the procedure will sit in the middle. And in sitting in the middle, we look at these two principles and draw the line as to how best, so that they do not cause undue delay. And also, they will also do not rush in order to prevent people from fighting their case. Okay? So the two will always go side by side. And I believe that our system is so developed that sometimes some of these things, the judges, they know how to handle them. They know how to handle them. They can see through where a person intends to. The intention of the person is not to go for expeditious trial or due process, but rather using all manner of things, technicalities, to cause undue delay. When that happens, the judges have a discretion and power to intervene. Because don't forget, when they are the monarchs when it comes to the court. When it's their court, and they will determine that if they have to be in charge, and if being in charge, they'll be able to decipher where you want to assist the process and where you want to unduly delay the process.
Okay. So it means there can be speedy dispatch, even though time may not necessarily be the issue. Even 3 years, 4 years, if it's still being looked at.
Well, mostly, I believe that with this, with the amendment to the Supreme Court rule to deal with election adjudication, what the time limit you are putting on may be extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Because the intention of the rules are to make expeditious adjudication. That's why they even removed review.
Yeah.
So that when they sit on it, even if it takes 4 months, 3 months, 5 months, it will be the end. Rather than sitting on it, somebody going on review, which the review can also take 6 months, so you are prolonging the matter. But they've changed the rules, and the intention of changing the rules is to ensure that
there is
rid of these matters and move on with our life. So the procedures have been made in such a way that there are time bounds now.
Yeah, okay.
Time bounds
mm-hmm.
to ensure that you have 10 days, this person has 5 days. You see, though, as law is not mathematics, sometimes certain things will happen, therefore, like what happened on Monday will happen. So,
Mr. Bokwajiman, we've come back to the same point where we started, and we want to thank you very much. The law is not mathematics, as you are saying. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Maswell Opoku Ajiman, S. a lecturer at the Ghana School of Law, explaining issues for us there. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court hearing the NDC's application to join President Mahama in the EC in the MPP's challenge of the 2012 presidential elections has fixed Wednesday for hearing, and Mr. Fukwadima alluded to it. This follows the decision of the MPP to withdraw its earlier decision against the composition of the panel. Last Thursday, when the case was due for hearing, the MPP raised an objection against the composition of the panel. This necessitated the court to adjourn after the NPP had been asked to file its objection in a written form. However, the MPP later withdrew its objection against the composition and urged the Supreme Court to fix a date for the substantive case. That is what has been done. Behind the news, you are live on Radio Savannah and on Ura Radio. To the management and staff of BBC Industrial Company at Tema, as well as residents of Ekomog, a slum in Accra, and shop owners at Kumasi Swami Magazine, the weekend fire outbreaks that they experienced could be a bad omen for the new year as they continue to count their loss. Reports say it took the Ghana National Fire Service more than 10 hours to bring the fire under control at the BBC company in Tema. For the residents at the Ekomog slum near the Kwame Nkrumah Circle in Accra, they watched on helplessly as the fire raised about 500 wooden structures. About 18 shops were also reported to have been destroyed in the Kumasi Swam Magazine fire outbreak. Ghana has been experiencing fire disasters at the industrial and residential areas in spite of the measures put in place to avert them. The question being put is, what are we not doing right? Behind the news is taking another look at the issue and finding answers to it. And joining us first on the line is Ohini Mensah, an assistant chief inspector of factories in charge of Greater Accra at the Ministry of Employment and Social Welfare. Welcome, sir.
Welcome.
And thanks so much for your time. Have you had the opportunity to visit the BBC Industrial Company?
Well, personally, I've not had the opportunity, but we send some of our inspectors to the office, to the factory too.
Mm-hmm. And what was the report in terms of the extent of damage?
Well, the damage is very extensive. It's very, very extensive. And it will take some time to really quantify the extent of damage.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is not the first time that we are recording such an industrial accident and looking at fire too. Did you find out, it may be early days yet, but did you find out whether there were safety regulations in place to have averted this particular disaster?
Are you talking about the
BBC one? Yes.
Okay. I may not be able to say there are safety measures put in place or not, but I know of BBC. They are law-abiding citizens, and they've been doing their business very well. But there are quite a lot of issues that come into play when there's a fire outbreak. It's not just electrical, fires, but there are quite a lot of materials that are used in that company that, are volatile, are flammable, and anything can happen at any time. Anything can happen at any time.
Mm-hmm.
It can be due to poor housekeeping at a point in time, and it can be due to overcrowding of materials in a particular warehouse. It can be due to wrong arrangement of some of the products and the raw materials. So there are quite a number of issues that come up when it comes to fire outbreak.
Yeah. So it may not be due to what may be existing, but something that can occur and then it will have such an effect. That is what you are saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, but in terms of inspection, have you really been on as inspectors going around the factories and checking what is happening there?
Yeah, with inspection, we don't have problem with inspection, but the number of inspection company is a problem, because if you have less than 30 inspections for the whole of Ghana, then the number of inspections that can take place within a month. You see, so it is the number of inspections that need to be undertaken, per a factory per a month or quarterly. That is the problem, because the number of inspectors for each region So I believe maybe the last time an instruction was carried, you know, in DBC might be more than 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. But you need periodic, you know, constant inspection and monitoring so that companies will always be on their toes. You know, there's one thing that you cannot enforce. You can't enforce the recruitment of safety officers in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our law. So you just have to appeal to some of these companies to employ a full-time safety officer. So in the absence of the factory inspector, the safety officer will take charge. He will be in charge to monitor and evaluate things every now and then. So that even for 3 months, if the factory inspector is not there, the officer who is knowledgeable will be able to put in place management system, monitor the system, evaluate the system, measure performance, you know, all over from A1 to, you know, any other day until maybe the external inspector comes in. But this is not so in this country. So it's just a few of the companies, especially the multinationals, who have, you know, full-time safety officers who really regulate, you know, monitor activities in the work area. So you realize that most of these companies don't encounter such accidents. They do not encounter such accidents. It's the other ones who do not have the safety officers, who don't have any management systems in place. And the small ones, you see, and it's really a bother. It's really a bother because you don't have the personnel to always or maybe twice in a month go to a particular factory. Unless there are special cases where we'll try to monitor the company over a period. Then when we realize that things have improved, we have to move to another area.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't spend the whole month or the whole year for one or two companies. We need to, you know, sample at least quite a number of companies in a particular region, you know, so that we can have a fair idea of their activity.
Okay. Won't dispatch you yet. Please hold on the line. We'll come back to you, Mr. Ohene Mensah. But we have also joining us Billy Anaglati, Deputy Public Relations Officer of the Ghana National Fire Service. He's been very busy in recent times trying to help combat fires. You are welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We asked earlier, Mr. Ohene Mensah, as to what was happening with BBC. You have been on the scene, and can you just give us an update of the situation?
Well, the BBC situation was something that everybody should look at as a wake-up call for every industry. Looking at the situation, looking at the destructive nature of this fire, of which this fire could have been prevented, Moli saying that since we were called on Saturday at 18:23, when we got there, you realized the whole place was really, gutted in this fire. But looking at the way they themselves have actually packed some of these highly flammable liquids on the ground, I was saying that if they were to have some sanity, they were to have established some safety measures on the ground, I believe that the situation, even if it would start, would not even have gotten to where it has gotten to. So I am again saying that we should all look at it as a wake-up call for everybody so that we'll be able to meet some of these safety measures on the ground.
You are going back to the issue of poor housekeeping as raised by Mr. Ohene Mensah. Do you think that might have been the only problem, or there were other things not seen too effectively that could have created the mayhem?
Well, if you talk of poor housekeeping, the poor housekeeping has a lot of implications, in the sense that if you are talking of poor housekeeping, you are also looking at electrical gadgets, what electrical installations and the usage of all these electrical things. You are also talking about how you'll be able to keep your other the newspapers and the properties that you think that you are close from work, and if there are any other gadgets, electrical gadgets that are not supposed to be on. You are looking at how you should be able to even dispose of your residue, of whatever production that you are doing. So, housekeeping entails a lot of things. In the case, how you are able to look at your safety measures and put safety measures on the ground. So, if you talk of your poor housekeeping, it therefore means that you do not have adequate fire safety measures on the ground. It's simply that. And you are not able to fabricate probably highly flammable, your combustible material substances with the low flammable ones. If you are, you fail to do that, then nobody should be surprised that fire should be initiated.
You mentioned arrangement. That is why I brought up the issue of housekeeping again.
I mentioned what? Come again.
Arrangement. The way things have been arranged in there.
Exactly. We still interviewed that we granted the people who were also told that when the fire started, they themselves, they struggled to get out of the premises because they have even blocked their own premises, their own entrance with some of these drums filled with these chemicals, chemicals in them. And then that is why we were also told that there were some vehicles that even got in there to be loaded, and they have also blocked because of the way the whole thing has been haphazardly packed in there. So we are only talking about safety. We are talking about safety measures in place. That is why we are talking about good housekeeping, which is not available within this premise.
Yeah. Mr. Naglati, this may be about the umpteenth time we are discussing fire outbreaks, and we've looked at safety measures over the period of time we've had you in our studios. Sometimes we keep asking, after the fire service has spoken, do you regularly visit some of these factories to ensure that things are being done right?
Thank you very much. The fire service is always ready and on their way to give some of these industries. But the frustration that you get in getting to some of these premises is so enormous that nobody would even try to continue to do some of the, but because it is emergency, look, you get to some of these premises, it's like they are not even ready for you to look at whoever it takes to have a decision and to have an authority to say that let this thing be done. You get in there, they tell you that the CEO is not there, you can't see the CEO, and you see the CEO, nothing goes on. You keep going in there, and you are not given the opportunity even to have your assessment, the fire safety assessment within the premises. You look at some of this frustration that you are giving, but because it is our work, we have always continued to augment our fire safety inspectorate to enable us to have adequate inspection in some of these premises.
Okay. Don't you have the power to even close down some of the institutions and tell them that because of this and that, we want to come back to see that things have been done well before you reopen?
Yeah, exactly. You are only taking the win out of the sale. About 3 or 4 years ago, that was exactly what we were doing. Closing down hotels, closing down filling stations, closing down commercial premises because we have not met our fire safety standards. But we decided to ensure that the first we should do is to have adequate education to the people to understand that they need to have this for their own benefit. You need to protect your investment. You need to protect the people that are working for you. You need to protect yourself. You need to protect the environment. So we are hoping that the education will be able to enable them do the right thing. But now that we realize that they are not doing, it is in the plan of the fire service that come this year that we have started. We are going to revisit.
Okay.
The closing down of those rooms to enforce our LR 7224 that has stated clearly the requirement of fire safety within these premises and ensuring that fire certificates are given. It's not a matter of just getting to premises to have a fire certificate. That will ensure that you have all the fire safety measures within it. So those companies, those institutions, those hotels and filling stations that are not meeting it, I am only sounded a warning to them that come this year that we have started, that we are going to ensure that we enforce our LR 7224 and make sure that we close down those premises.
Mr. Billy Naglati, certainly we'll be talking as you continue on that activity so that we don't record such fires again. We want to thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
That's the Deputy Public Relations Officer of the Ghana National Fire Service, Billy Naglati. But coming back to you, Mr. Hinemensa, you've heard what Mr. Naglati said. How are you collaborating to ensure that at least our factories still remain places where they are employing people and not where people will be crying.
I share his concern about the frustration that sometimes you get when you visit some of these installations. They are quite enormous. But we've been able to collaborate with the fire service in time past, to even close the fire service in Tema, together with the EPA. We have that collaboration over there in Tema, where a few companies who have fallen foul of the law were had premises closed down. I left Tema some few years ago, and I'm now in Accra, but we are also trying to start something so that in conjunction with the fire service and the EPA, we'll be able to go down and then make sure that, factories and companies comply with the very basic safety regulations and laws in this country. Some of the self and safety laws in this country are inefficient, and there is the effort to beef up the factories, offices, and shops, which is the main component of occupational health and safety in this country. And it's in the pipeline to come out with a new national occupational health and safety policy. And it's reached, I think it's now with the ministry ready to be ready before cabinet. And I believe if the government, takes a conscious effort to pass this policy, I think it's a call for a new occupational health and safety bill, which will mandate every occupier or workplace to employ a safety officer. So in the absence of any regular external inspection, there will be a knowledgeable safety officer who will ensure that good housekeeping is kept. Workers get the needed and work processes are done safely. Things that are needed to safeguard the work process are all put in place. And I also want to ask the to also add their voice. But they're also a pressure group.
Okay.
I believe if they also put their act together, we can all come up with a safety conscious nation. Actually, the nation, we are not safety conscious. That is one of them. We are not safety conscious. And it is from the top, from the government down to the liberal, we are not safety conscious. So it's difficult to instill discipline into even workers. They would rather like money than their protective equipment.
Okay.
Why? Because of Brown. You see, that we are trying to collaborate with other agencies to come up with programs and activities that will raise the consciousness and the safety awareness of workers and their environment.
So, Inemensa, we want to thank you very much, but as you are saying, this is not a time to even relax at all after this one, because we've had some in the past and we were thinking, it will alert us to do much more, but unfortunately, it continues to happen. So we'll be looking into what you'll be doing to avert further disasters. I want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Inemensa is an Assistant Chief Inspector of Factories in charge of Greater Accra, the Ministry of Employment and Social Welfare. Behind the news, you are live in Bunafo region on Radio BL. Sechuma Kwabwa is the Executive Director of the Association of Ghana Industries. He's on the line with us. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Certainly, for the Association of Ghana Industries, this is not a pleasant news at all. What are you doing, together with your members and the relevant authorities, to ensure that things are done the way they should be done so that we don't record such disasters?
Well, thank you very much. I think that we are indeed uncomfortable when we hear news of this nature, and we've really been sad by the developments at the BBC. And first of all, let me express our sympathy to the company and the losses and the damages that they have incurred. Definitely, AGI is not happy about this at all, and we've been seriously concerned. As you may recall, latter part of last year, I think in November, we had a similar situation at Danex, one of our pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm.
And we were indeed very concerned. And then again, it's happened. So, such situations, we would wish that it never occurs. Our role really is one of educating our members to take the necessary preventive measures to make sure that
safety is given priority. Everybody is aware of the safety measures, and every effort is made to prevent occurrence of this nature. You know, when it happens, sometimes you only think of the people and various institutions, but what is even more critical is also the companies and the damages and the effect it has on the economy, because BBC is a big company producing for local market. Whenever there is a gap, then we have to fill that gap with imports. Already we are complaining about large volume of imports competing with our local products. So in a situation like this, everybody is a loser. The company itself is a loser, government is a loser, workers are losers, and all other stakeholders. So indeed, it's a worrying situation, but what we can do is to continue educating our people that indeed they should take safety measures very, very serious. And we always encourage our people to take insurance. But taking insurance is not the solution. Mm-hmm. Insurance can only maybe repair part of the damage. It can hardly compensate you fully for whatever damage you may have incurred as a result of the fire outbreak. Because even where you are reinstated in terms of physical damage that was created, your market share you would have lost in the period. The customers would have lost, because in the process they will also go elsewhere and look for other alternatives. You may never be sure of getting those customers back. So, I mean, the company loses greatly whenever there is power, like there's a fire outbreak. And therefore, we are very unhappy. And we think that the education must go on. People should take safety precautions very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I know you've been interviewing some of the factory inspectorate division, the government agency responsible for fire. I think they should also take their work seriously so that they are advised. They constantly advise our companies on what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any company would deliberately or would take up measures that would not prevent them from having fire outbreak. And therefore, if I'm sure with proper counseling, they will take up issues and make sure that we prevent it from occurring.
So in this case, you are calling for counseling on a regular basis. But will you draw a program that will work with the agencies concerned? Because already some are even complaining about personnel not being adequate to go all around. How would you put in place measures to ensure that at least you get them on board regularly?
Well, as I said, it's a comprehensive measure that has to be taken, and key stakeholders have to be involved. It is just not one stakeholder that can do this and make it work effectively well.
Mm-hmm.
Government has a major role to play. Industries pay taxes. Industries contribute to our tax revenue. And therefore, government institutions that have been charged to do this must be resourced properly. It may be difficult to ask industries to come and be paying for inspecting their factories all the time. They on their own do a lot. Some have their own safety personnel whom they train, who constantly monitor things, who they are on their payroll and they pay them. They buy safety equipment, they buy the fire extinguishers. They have to make sure that factories are properly designed. It's an engineering work, which if it's a big factory or it's a well-organized factory, they do critically well. So they spend all this money. That is already expenditure that the factories do. You know, and therefore, the role that other agencies also have to play, they also have to play their role well. Resource is always a constraint. I appreciate that. And I also know that the factory inspectorate division, for example, has serious challenges with resources. So it is one of advocacy on their behalf that government should resource them appropriately, because it's an issue. And the damage that is causing is so huge and it affects everybody. And therefore, a lot more attention should be paid. Resource them properly. I appreciate that they have challenges.
Okay.
But I think the role of the companies themselves
should be looked at.
Should be looked at. And they have to do their own. But I'm sure some of them are doing reasonably well. But those that are in the nature of their activity is such that it is highly susceptible to fire.
Mm-hmm.
They should be a bit more cautious.
Okay.
That for sure, we will always advise them.
Mr. Chuma Kwabwa,
I don't know the cause of the fire.
Yeah.
Therefore, I don't want to preempt things and start assigning reasons and say it's because of maybe poor safety environment. I have no clue as to what caused. Sometimes even electricity
fluctuations
can trigger it. So many factors that can trigger it, and therefore I don't want to make any pronouncement.
Good. We don't want more such fires, so what we'll be doing is that occasionally we'll still be calling on you to ask how many factories you visited to ensure that we don't get them again. But we want to thank you very much for your concerns tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Sechuma Akwaboa is the Executive Director of the Association of Ghana Industries. Behind the news, this is where we wrap it all up. And before we go, some text messages here. AU Farouk in Tamale is saying, indeed, I'm ready to join the witness stand if I'm called, because NPP has no case or evidence to challenge the verdict of innocent Ghanaians. And Kujue Kings Cape Coast, as some international observers included in the president's witnesses, if so, then the NPP must do something now. And Daniel Kwashi, thanks to the visionary leadership of late Prof. Samuels for equipping the fire service with modern firefighters. And this is where we say bye for today. On behalf of Nina Iso, our sound controller, and production team of Edmond Tete, Christopher Sidu, Agatha Asamoah, John Pobi, Bright Agama, and Sunriser Barbara Yakubu, my name is Kingsley Obinchere.